Hey, everybody. Joel Nelson here at the Northwest Sports Show Minneapolis Convention Center. Sitting in alone with a couple guys I know and appreciate. I'm a Lund Pro staffer. That's why we're here. We're going to talk a little bit about fishing and some boats.
I'm Ryan Deshane from Wired to Fish. I head up video content and production for Wired to Fish. My Lund affiliation spans back to my childhood when my family bought our first 16-foot Lund Rebel at the Westgate Mall in Brainerd, Minnesota. My professional career in media started with the Linders, so I spent almost a decade under that legendary brand, you know, with Lund Boats. It's very much part of my professional DNA, taking that to Wired to Fish, and here we are.
Jason Freed, a Lund Boats pro staff, as well as a fishing guide with Leisure Outdoor Adventures. And also, I help run the Ultimate Fishing Camp for Lund Boats as well in the summer.
Sure. Yeah. I'm running an 1875 Pro V this year. I've ran that boat 5 or 6 times in the past. I've had a 1975 Pro V. This band's, you know, Ryan was talking about his history with the brand. Mine is very similar. I've been running a Lund forever. I had a 2007 1775 Pro V that I used on the Mississippi River as a fast little boat. Got me up and down the river quite a bit. And I've just always loved that model. One thing I can tell you about the Pro V, tons of storage, stuff everywhere, full-length rod storage. And so when you're talking about Pro V, in my instance, in the springtime, there's move-in day. When I say move-in day, I mean it's like a day. For me anyway, I really like putting everything where it has its place. Things that have gone in the glove compartment for the past 10 years, they go there again this year. And I just get everything set up the way I need for fishing. Spring panfish, early season walleyes, haul all that stuff in. Ryan, I think it was you guys. You had a great video years ago about that overhead rod storage.
Sure.
So I did that in my boat. And so, yeah, we sit there for a day and we play fishing for a little while.
Right on. I've ran a 2075 Pro V Bass, I believe, now for about the last 4 years. At Wired to Fish, a good portion of our content is bass focused, but I'm also a multi-species guy from northern Minnesota. So Pro V Bass built on the famous Lund IPS2 hull. It's a very capable big water boat. So I spend time musky fishing, walleye fishing on big natural lakes. But I also like to take it on smaller bodies of water, the Mississippi River, run a hydraulic. Kind of do everything, as well as fish bass at a pretty high level. And like Joel said, mega storage, unlike any other bass boats on the market. Got a pretty unique system where I have all my tackle boxes and containers. So move in for me is part mechanical. So I'm going to be checking tire pressures. I'm going to be checking if I drain my gear lube last spring, that I've got fresh gear lube in. I'm going to be topping off my gas tank with a fresh tank, a 91 octane, to start my season off. And then the other part of that is, you know, packing all of your gear and making sure it's ready. You know, I'm a huge nerd when it comes to organization and a little too fussy, but that's going to take a good 5 to 6 hours.
Yeah, for me, I've bounced back and forth between tillers and windshields. I've ran a tiller now for the last 4 seasons, a 2075 Pro Guide, and a lot about the boat I select has a lot to do with being a fishing guide. And so I need a lot more room when you got 4 people and a guide in the boat. So I've had those for the last 4 years. This year, I'm actually going back to the 2075 Pro V, which I'm excited about. I ran one of those 5 years ago, and I've ran, like Joel, like 1975 Pro V, Pro Guides. And my first Lund was a 1900 Pro V, and single console was an awesome boat. It was a rocket. But I do a lot of guiding on big water, so Leech and Vermilion and, you know, Cass and these lakes. So to have a big boat with room and space for everybody is really important for me. So, and storage, because as a fishing guide, you've got, you know, to me, it's a mobile office, and I'm going from lake to lake to lake. And so, you know, if I'm going to fish smallmouth, or I'm going to fish walleyes, or I'm going to go this lake or this lake, I got to have all that stuff. And so I'm kind of OCD as well when it comes to organization. I've got the great thing about the Pro V and any of these boats is I'll have my bass stuff is in one spot and my walleye stuff's in another spot. And I've got, you know, controlling rods and all this, you know, so I literally can switch gears on a moment's notice and say, hey, this isn't working. We got to go do something else. And so that's the awesome thing about Lund boats is there's so much storage. Usually you got open storage sometimes. But for me, I think a lot of the thing is battery maintenance, making sure, you know, a lot of people sometimes if they'll charge their batteries but a lot can go wrong with batteries. And last thing you want to do is show up to the boat access on, you know, your first day out or fishing opener and you got a dead battery or a battery that's not taking a charge. So, you know, if you have a boat from last year, check your batteries, make sure they're taking a charge, make sure all your connections are good, they're clean. You know, those are just little things. I mean, you want to make sure everything's in your boat. You know, I have a little checklist I go through and make sure I've got my throw and my life jackets and all the things you need because you want to have a great experience your first day out on the water, and nothing's worse than going out there and forgetting something or having a little issue that's just can make your whole day not worthwhile.
So all three of you
are right? Yep.
What is it about
the for me, it's the IPS 2 hull. I mean, it's built, well, they say it's, you know, it's built by fishermen for fishermen. And as a walleye fisherman, I can go back and back troll with it. I can go forward with it. If I want to troll cranks, I can do that. If I got to switch over to bass, I've got like, the casting deck in the front and the back. It's the perfect setup for me.
For bass fishing, at our level at Wired to Fish, we also do a lot with electronics manufacturers and, you know, various accessories. So the Pro-V is the platform that allows me to mount some pretty big multi-function displays and leverage all these fish finder technologies and then get out on the water with a lot of people. I got two aft flip-up seats in the bass boat. Well, that's not all that common. Plus, I got a nice little cockpit area so I can put four people in the boat and go have a pretty good on-the-water experience. The other thing from where I live is fluctuating water levels. I mean, we had a pretty low water season last year. And I actually run a roller trailer. You don't see roller trailers with fiberglass bass boats. So that allows me to put the boat in a lot of places that you're not going to put a bunk boat in. You know, I can get a bunk trailer or I can get a roller trailer, but that's definitely an upsell for me is to access water that other people aren't able to.
You know, Ryan mentioned something about the way that he works with his boats. And I think all of us have to be versatile in the way we fish. And we fish for a lot of different species, a lot of crazy different bodies of water, early spring patterns, all the way to late fall. So we need a boat to be a Swiss Army knife. And I think that Pro-V really is the Swiss Army knife. And another thing you heard both of these guys say is they're a little bit OCD. They're hyper organized. I feel that's just a trait of somebody that's in the industry as a guide, does media. It's just kind of what we have to do to make sure we have what we need where we need it. So that excess storage for me is really what it's all about for a multi-species angler. I love that I can have, just like you said, Frito, you can put your walleye stuff in one area. Yep. and not have it overflow and spill into the bass stuff. And then when I'm with my kids, which I do fish a lot with them, they're getting into that organization system too. And like they're figuring out where things go. And it really is nice, a well-oiled machine, a ship that's got a plan and a direction really does make a difference when you're out there fishing at a higher level. And this way, I'm fully organized. I've got everything where I need it to be.
So for me, I'm a Lowrance guy, and you know it's Ford Chevy. You know, everybody's got the thing, but I'll have the Active Target this year on my boat, and so I'm looking forward to kind of how I'm going to have my graph set up. And I'm going to have my 212s right here, the dash and the console, but I'm going to be able to use the Active Target both in the back and in the front of the boat. And so I do a lot of with customers. We do a lot of pitch and jigs and a lot of slip bobber fishing for walleyes. And so to be able to kind of have that ability to seek fish out and find those fish that are roaming around, I'm really excited about that. I didn't get a chance to use it last year yet because it came so late in the season, but I'm going to have it on my boat this year. So whether it's, you know, finding crappies in the spring or walleyes or even smallmouth fishing, that's going to be the piece of technology for me that I think that's going to be kind of a game changer. And I think it's going to be fun. I mean, with customers, it's a lot about guiding is teaching and educating. And so to be able to show customers how the fish is reacting to the bait and how we have to make adjustments is all part of that educational process.
I happen to run Humminbird units, but the technologies that I'm going to talk about could apply to all the major manufacturers, you know, Lowrance, Garmin, Humminbird. But in the case of me in the 2075 Pro-V Bass, I happen to run a 15-inch screen at the console. That gives me a nice four quad split side imaging, mapping, down imaging, 2D sonar, great. I'm networked up to the bow, and that's where in a bass boat the business gets done. So I have a seminar that I'm going to be speaking at tonight, and one of the reasons I'm down here is to talk about two new advancements in fish finder technologies, 360 sonar and then forward facing sonar. Incredible advancements. Basically, with 360 sonar, I got a transducer that spins around and paints basically a highly detailed map of the bottom texture that I can kind of superimpose as a layer on top of my contour map to really understand what's around me. There's a rock pile there at my 12 o'clock. There's a weed bed there. And then I can see something of interest and then scan around with my forward-facing sonar transducer and confirm the presence of fish. Now what that technology allows me to do is see fish swimming around in real time, cast a lure out to the fish, see how that fish responds to my lure, and then cat and mouse to really figure out what they're willing to bite. I can make smart lure change, lure decisions. I can make adjustments, how to work the bait, and just learn a lot about fish biology that I never knew before, and then, you know, figure out that I was wrong on a lot of things. So it's pretty fun. The technology end of it, I think, is really unique. And I think it's a fair thing to discuss that the stuff is so good now that we need to look at conservation and harvest and those types of things. And we also need to understand that to get young people into the sport of fishing, the technology is a huge draw. You're putting a screen in the boat. That's where kids are. They're raised on tech. The tech is a unique way to bring them into the boat and experience nature. And I think it's important for recruitment. So,
well, these guys are absolutely dialed. I'm going to echo a lot of their sentiments. And when it comes down to it, I think there's been no greater development than initially 360, but now any of the live forward viewing sonar technology that's out there. So it's interesting. I was just at an ice fishing photo shoot. I was talking to Tony Roach, who's another Lund Pro staff, and talking about how he uses it. And do you mount it on the trolling motor? Do you mount it on the side of the gunwale? How do you use it with clients, with yourself, when you're scoping fish for your kids? Like what? And the answer is like A, B, C, D. Like it's all of the above, right? Yep. It would be great to have everything. But I think this year, just based on how limited electronics have been, it's been really hard to get your hands on electronics. I'm going to be running it at the gunwale and just doing a lot of setup work for my kids. You know, Ryan explained it very well, what any of those live forward viewing sonar technologies do. But what I really want to do for my kids is go along a shoreline, maybe side scan, locate a pot of fish, swing back on them, get that live or forward facing sonar on the fish, and then help my kids place casts. So I've already done some of this with them, and ice fishing has been a revelation with these things. I'm sure you guys would agree. But in open water, being able to help them target their casts real time, you teach them to cast first and foremost, right? Like a little bit to the left, not far enough, a little bit closer, and they get that instant, you know, feedback right on the screen, and they can see where things land. And like you said, how fish react on the river, it's amazing. There's just some days where fish seem to be swimming against the current almost primarily. Walleyes are just kind of creeping up river. And then other days, it seems like they're holding tight, hanging in some of these sand, little blowouts, or even moving downriver. And what I've learned in current situations from walleyes with this technology has just been amazing. And I look forward to adding to it because every year, yeah, I'm sure you guys agree, we learn so much more. Every hour on the water is an opportunity to pick up a couple extra things. Yeah, sure. What's the difference between what's different than being looked at?
Is that right? I would, a core thing for me, and especially if you're fishing different bodies of water you may not be as familiar with, is you do want a good map as your base, just from a sheer navigation and safety standpoint. And a lot of the tech, most of the cartography companies, most of the manufacturers now have good mapping, and it allows you to interact with the map. So you could set a depth highlight to like 5 foot and under, and then avoid driving in a color that is painted. So I'm not going to have to worry about hitting my prop on the bottom. That's a big confidence deal.
For sure.
And then, you know, beyond that, it really depends on how serious of an angler you are. So you want mapping to know where you're driving on planet Earth, and you can fish, find spots, fish safely. And then 2D sonar is going to be included with that. But, you know, side imaging still new to a lot of folks. And boy, as I talked about a little bit ago on 360 painting, this imagery of what is on the bottom as far as texture, structure, and cover. Side imaging is pretty fun, driving around and just looking and seeing what's out there, marking fish, seeing what's on the bottom. And you can get that technology now. The price points really come down, and is it, you know, depending on the size of the screen, is reasonably accessible. And you can have those two units talk between the front of your boat and the back of the boat with a basic network cable. So, you know.
Yeah, I would suggest, I think the screen size is important. You know, I think sometimes people they scale back, and I think at least a 9-inch screen, I think, helps a person out, because you can split screen that. And I think that's huge. But like you said, mapping is, I think sometimes we get caught up in all this forward-facing technology, but you still got to get to the spot. You still got to know where that spot is and what that spot looks like. And so I think a map, like Ryan said, is super important. And then from there, I guess my piece of advice would be more so like, just, you know, it's a computer, right? I mean, so it's like our phones. Like we probably only really use about 25 to 30% capability of what our phone is actually able to do. And I think our graphs are the same way. And so it's just learning it. And I've always, customers, I tell them, like, if you buy a brand new graph, go on a body of water that you are familiar with, and you know that there's maybe a rock pile here or some, some down trees or some logs, and then just drive and educate yourself about what you're seeing. Because half the time people don't understand what a fish looks like on a side scan or side imaging or any of those kinds of things. And so to be able to go someplace that you're familiar with, then it just gives you confidence to then go to that new body of water and say, okay, I know what a fish looks like on that side imaging or side scan. And I think that's important, but I don't think you can overlook the mapping. Is, I mean, I think we can get caught up in all this new technology, but I think most people are going to know about 25 to 40% of the capability of their depth finder. And if they can get good at that, they're still going to be good fishermen.
I think Freed's right on. You mentioned something about screen size. It kind of took my point. I think people should always try to purchase the biggest screen size that they can comfortably afford. It's a real letdown to have all this technology and a hard to see kind of tiny viewfinder. And you always feel a little bit let down, especially, if you're in a situation like this and maybe it's up on the dash and you're trolling, you got a kicker, you need to view it from further away than you otherwise would think, or you're running the trolling motor from back here. Big screen size and real estate on that is really important. But, if I had to prioritize the technologies in my boat or the boats of friends, the way I would go, I think GPS mapping is really number one, like you said, for safety, for navigation, comfortability, and then reading those contours. You could make a short course or a long course on just that alone. The next thing for me is just the traditional sonar. I think we're so used to looking at 2D down sonar over the years, especially for deep water situations, less for shallow, but deep water, walleyes, things like that. It's so nice to drive over and read what we've read for years, understand that, know in your mind's eye what that means. Next for me, side imaging. And I think 360 is kind of a version of side imaging. It's just all the way around. But in between that, for me, we haven't talked about a Talon. I use a single Talon, just a retractable telescoping pole, a 12-footer. And for a lot of the pan fishing that I do, even some of the walleye fishing, right? I got the trolling motor down. I'm running spot lock and so on and so forth. But sometimes it is really nice to lock with spot lock, drop that Talon, force the two away from each other as if you're pulling a rope tight. And you just kind of sit there and park there. Your front end might waver a little bit, but to really lock in and work things slowly, more methodically, that Talon has been really nice. And with a family, docking situations with a Talon,
oh, gosh, yeah,
it's nuts. I mean, it's great. When I see a clown show going on at the ramp, I just go off to the side and I Talon down and I start putting things away and let that mess work itself out. Then pull in, drop my Talon. My boys already know to go up to the front. They grab from the bow, just kind of tie off a dock line, put a little bumper in there, and now we can onload, offload, take things out really safely. So that's top notch. And it's hard because from a dollars and cents perspective, that live view, that forward facing sonar, I mentioned it last. I don't mean it to be last because it is so awesome, but it is like right now the most expensive, arguably one of the most expensive components in boat accessories. So I think you start with some of the other things we talked about there, and I love all of those components. I'm not running 360 this year. I'm hoping that the live or the four view will account for some of that along with the side scanning. So that's kind of the way I go about it.
I think one thing that we kind of might overlook too is with fishermen is the down imaging or down scan.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a fisherman who's used 2D most of your whole life.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at 2D, sometimes you like, oh, that's a giant fish. Well, it might be three fish right next to each other, right? And it looks like one mark, you know? And so I, for me, when downs imaging or downscan came out, whenever that was, probably 10, 11 years ago, like, yeah. To me, that was a game changer. Like it took what you were looking at on your 2D and it completely gave you a different picture. And so, I mean, whether you're, you know, trying to find bass and boulders or, you know, fish and weeds or whatever, I think it creates a big picture. So if you're that, you know, person out there who's your whole life is just, you've used a map and a 2D and you're looking to get a new graph, I would definitely suggest having a down imaging or down scan of some sort, yeah. Because it was a game changer for me.
For sure. And you know, if you get a unit that's side image enabled, you're going to have both side imaging and down imaging, but you can also just get a down view or down imaging, unit as well. But to that point, I mean, I use it a lot for putting in a head count. You drive over a school of fish.
Yeah.
I might think there's three there on 2D sonar, but there's 10 fish there. There's 10 walleye there. And as much time as you spend on the water as a guide, you probably set a threshold on, if there's that many fish, that's going to be worth my time. The chances of success are pretty high. So you're counting dots, but in addition to counting dots, you're going to see some size difference. So you get a pretty good idea how big the fish are too. So that is pretty sweet.
It's all about efficiency on the water for so much of what we do. Like you mentioned, it might not be worth your time as a guide to stop on certain spots unless you can really confirm what it is that you think you're seeing. And when it comes to efficiency, I think that's the other thing we need to underscore, is that if this all sounds really intimidating to you, and it still is sometimes intimidating even to me, and I'm living it and using it, keep it simple, stupid, right? KISS. I really think that you can just start with those components that we prioritized and build up from there. You don't need to buy it all at once. You can start, try it out, see what you think, and build and add to the arsenal as you feel like you need it.
If you get into it with a bait to your budget and you really like it and you want to grow, you can always grow into it. And that's probably a really good problem because it's getting outside. So,
yeah. For me, it's the rod holder, you know, and to be able to, last year with the new locking system,
yeah,
not having to use the sliders last year, to be able to move stuff around, you know, whether it's, you know, this year it'll be having a pull system,
yep.
And to be able to have that and be able to move it where I want it, it just kind of sets up the boat how you need it. And so, you know, being a walleye guy, first and foremost, rod holders would be my number one thing. But then also, I use the ram for the trolling motor.
Yeah.
And so the trolling motor doesn't bounce around because I fish a lot of big water.
Rod holders for me, the Pro V bass boat is used in a multi-species capacity, so muskie, walleye, and then just if you're fishing with kids, it's nice to be able to secure a rod and a rod holder with a cork or something like that. So rod holders for me.
Yeah, I would echo the rod holders. I'll also say that sliding locking system that you mentioned is super sweet because it slides easier, and then when it locks hard and fast. And I've got two of those with just boat bumpers, and you never know where you're going to dock sometimes, like what it's going to look like, and jagged boards hanging out. And we invest a lot, and this is kind of our livelihood, most of us. So we try to keep our boats as clean and as good for the next owner as possible. So, yeah, those bumpers on that sliding lock system, it's really been good for me.
No, and I mean, for me, I've ran a lot of different boats. I ran a lot of Pro V models, but ran the 202 glass, ran the 219 glass. And so for me, when Lund transitioned and kind of moved the plant and everything, I had no problem going back to an aluminum boat. And I don't know. To me, the ride is every bit the same. And, you know, some people like the glass. I always joke about the sparkles. You know, the Lund boat's got the sparkles, and everybody likes the sparkles. But, you know, the system and the hull and the riveting and everything, I think it creates a comfortable ride. And And so, like I said, I've had glass, and there's nothing. The glass boats are awesome. And so for me, it was just comfort, and going back to aluminum was the way I wanted to do. Have you guys ran glass?
Say that again.
Have you ran a glass boat?
I have run glass boats. Actually fished for the TV show for a while where we used a competitor glass boat. And it's interesting. You're never going to beat an aluminum boat for storage. We've talked about the importance of storage. But the other thing I'd say is that I think that people that are really hung up on only glass or glass is the best for me and that's the only way I'll ever go sometimes aren't always comparing apples to apples. I think a lot of glass boats run 19 feet, 20 feet, 21 feet. They tend to be slightly longer boats. If you're comparing an equally length boat, you're still bridging a lot of those same waves. Like you said, the IPS2, that hull does keep you dry. Typically, there's a windshield just on a lot of those glass boats. I at times I've wanted the heft of a glass boat, but my 1875 sits in the water real nice. And that's the smallest of the Provens. You go up from there, and it's a much heavier, big water, more substantial boat that tracks well, whether you're trolling, whether you're just idling. And so I don't have a lot left that I want from my aluminum boat to do. So I'm pretty happy with where I'm at.
You're good?
Switching gears here, we're about, even though today it's 20 degrees out, but we're only 2 short months away from the water season. What are you guys doing? What are you fishing for over here at the Lake Lakes League?
That's easy for me. I'll be on Leech Lake bright and early, Saturday morning. I'll have a jig in the middle of my hand, and if I can hopefully spot tails will be way to go, but it's hard to get away from the standard jig in the middle. If the water temps are good, I'm a live bait guy, especially early in the season, but we can't overlook just the slow drag of a leech, especially those small, those post-spawn walleyes, or sometimes that leech is just a nice simple little meal. But I'll be on leech. I'll be pounding around, but I would say either a long shank jig or a stand-up jig of some sort for pitching and casting around will be what I'm doing.
I'll probably be bass focused, and smallmouth bass on a Minnesota opener is usually pretty darn prime. And the nice thing is you're going to have pike and walleye shallow too. So I'll have a jerkbait on, and I'll be kind of using my forward-facing sonar to scan around and look for fish that are suspended a little bit and just kind of playing cat and mouse with them. And usually I like to fish a few different lakes, so I like to mix it up between largemouth and smallmouth. So I might be on some smaller lakes throwing around spinnerbaits and chatterbaits, and then, jerkbaits on our clearer bodies of water for smallmouth and walleye and pike. So the walleye fishing on jerkbaits is actually really excellent, especially when you can see the individual fish. It's amazing how well you can catch walleye on hard baits if you're able to interact with them. I bet they can be really nuanced on how you work that bait and getting them to commit. And oftentimes that bait has to sit still for an extended period of time, and then the walleye will come up and just nip it. So it's just kind of fun fooling fish, and that's what I really enjoy doing early in the season when there's a bunch of fish up shallow.
So for me, opener has never really had the super strong up north tradition because I'm from southern Minnesota and we're 25 minutes from Red Wing and before the Mississippi River, which has a continuous open season being border water. So, and then I fish a lot of spring panfish. So opener is just kind of another day to me, but I'm typically fishing it. I'm typically doing one of four things on opener. I'm up north fishing something like upper red, trying to enjoy that traditional, like you said, jig and minnow type experience, which is super fun. I mean, I think everybody really likes that. The feel of working a jig down a break, feeling the bottom, kind of mentally mapping the bottom, feeling that tick and setting the hook is pretty awesome. I might be actually pan fishing if the weather's poor. I don't always love to play with walleyes if walleyes don't want to play with me, and I'm not forced to as a guide. Yep. So I take the easy way out and just go throw at some crappies. If I got to use minnows and throw them under a bobber, that's fun for me. I don't mind it. And in my spring pan fishing in southern Minnesota, sometimes I run into walleyes early and I get the drop on them. You're just checking out the shallows to see some good coontail, and all of a sudden a bunch of white tips, and you're like, I'm gonna remember that for later, come back to them, maybe opener. And then the last thing I might be doing, if I'm being honest, is sitting in a turkey blind. thinking about fishing because I love turkey hunting. But if it's going to be busy, certain openers, if they're super warm or the weather's super favorable, I can just expect certain places will be crawling with people. And I'll go ahead and fish Monday and Tuesday if I can get away.
That's a tough question.
It is a tough. There's always a lot of like new baits that come out every year and things like that. I can answer in saying that I think the Ned Rig is certainly nothing new by any standards. But it just continues to produce fish again and again and again. And for me, having kids, it's an easy way to help them catch fish and not have to be super talented in technique. You can kind of just throw it out there, drag it along the bottom, shake and shimmy it a little bit, and all of a sudden their line's moving off the side and set the hook. So I'll be continuing to get them used to feel with rods and reels. And there's a couple new St. Croix rods, some longer panfish rods I'm excited about using. 7 foot or better is always what I've been interested in using with a lot of panfish rods. They've got a 7.3 medium light extra fast now that I've been working with them on a little bit. And the medium light, I've always had a problem with whippy panfish rods. I hate it. An ultra light, even a light sometimes is way too light. Yeah, especially if you're pitching something heavier, especially if you're trying to achieve distance, you want that longer rod. Sometimes you're pulling spinners, especially later in the summer. You want something that can stand up to the heft of that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to just fishing longer rods and some heavier powers and, throwing some Ned Rigs with the boys and catching everything, anything, bass, walleyes, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't have anything real specific in the way of lures. And I'm kind of tying lures a lot to that forward-facing sonar now because in my line of work, that's such an intriguing thing, being able to see fish and see how they respond to bait. So I have a arsenal of a bunch of different manufactured baits, but again, a jerk bait is kind of that ultimate tool early in the year. And just, you know, we have some staff at Wired to Fish that are able to put in a heck of a lot more time than I am right now, given my current chapter of life with kids, but they go out and they catch tremendous walleye on jerk baits regularly, along with bass and everything else. So, you know, Rapala shadow wraps, husky jerks, you know, paddle tail swim bait, stuff that I can cast out. I can see the bait, I can see the fish, and then, you know, there's a lot of awesome tackle on the market now for sure, that have high quality hooks, and you can pair it with a, you know, terminal tackle that you can pair any number of plastics. So it's just playing around and experimenting quite a bit. And I love catching fish on new things. So
I think for me, it's the more I've learned from guys like Ryan is taking bass applications and realizing you can use a lot of them walleye fishing. And then that walleye, you don't just have to drag a Lindy rig around and you can be aggressive when you walleye fish. And so I get excited about some of these aggressive style baits and try to catch walleyes on those. And so I might have customers, you know, bobber fishing or something, and I'm trying something, you know, to see if I can provoke a bite from happening. And so I get excited when I see that kind of stuff. But I'll kind of echo what Joel was saying. I think sometimes we overlook the importance of having the right rod with the right presentation. And sometimes we just say, oh, I got a 6'6" medium rod. I'll just use this for jigging and Lindy rigging and whatever. But in reality, as I've learned the last few years, is having those rod specifics to your presentations is really important. And I do a lot with Elliott and 2D fishing rods. And, you know, and that's a whole nother. We talk about graphs and we can spend a lot of money. And there's something to be said for having a rod that's light and super sensitive and to be able to say, this is my jerkbait rod, this is my bobber rod, this is my Lindy rig rod. And to be able just to grab, and, you know, one of the worst, we talk about efficiency, right? And, you know, you can sit in your boat and be tying stuff all day long, but to be able to say, all right, I got that walleye didn't react to that bass. Okay, I'm just going to pick up this rod and do that. And that's changed for me, you know, and as a guide, I have all these things in my boat and to be able to just grab, and I'm not sitting there for half hour tying knots and my customers are all staring at me. I can say, here, use this now. And the one piece of advice I give people, if you have these rods, you invest in these rods and they're an investment, is some sort of rod sleeve or rod slick of some sort. not only does it protect your rod and your investment, but it allows you to get more rods in the boat. You know, I could take what, you know, the standard 15 rods in the rod holder, rod storage here, and now I can get 25 rods in there. And I can, because I can double up rods. And so, you know, spend a little bit of money and go get some rod sleeves. You're going to protect your investment. You're going to protect the eyelets. You're not going to break stuff as much. Stuff's not going to get caught on each other when you're in the rod lockers. And you can bring more rods in the boat. So, you know, if you're, your dad out there looking to buy a few rods, you know, here you go.
This is a good solution for folks that have a very important question. What is the snap?
Ooh.
I don't mean to steal their answer, because I know that their answer is probably going to be my answer, but a meat something, a meat stick, a beef jerky, a chunk of meat, maybe a little bit of cheese. It's really nice. I use my front live well as a cooler. I think a lot of guys do. You just stop at a gas station, or if you got ice at home, you fill that sucker full of ice, throw all your snacks, pop and water in there. If you are keeping or cleaning fish, you can bleed them in the live well just before you're ready. And a lot of times there's a cleaning station back at the ramp. Clean and then dump them in a bag right back on the ice. And there's just no better way that I've found to operate with that. But for snacks, man, I always got that front live well full of some beef sticks or deer sticks, something like that, maybe a little bit of cheese.
Nothing. I'm really good at, you know, and Al Linder is kind of known for that too. It's just like, if you're lucky, if there's a bottle of water. So I usually have a bottle of water, which is why I don't have a lot of takers oftentimes, which is fine. I like to go fish by myself here and there. So you better be packing some snacks and whatever you want to bring, because I kind of take the opportunity to fast. I sit on the computer way too much and probably snack more than I need to. So I like to get out. And
it's your intermittent fasting program.
Yeah, there you go. Fasting. If you buy a Lund, you can also, yeah, you can do the intermittent fasting or pack a feast in the coolers, I guess. But,
right.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I do a lot of guiding and I'm on the water for 10, 12 hours. So I try to have stuff that's going to give me some little boost of energy that's not a Red Bull.
Yeah.
And so I'm like Joel, beef jerky is a big, you know, some sort of beef jerky, cheese stick, almonds, big for me. But if I got to have a sweet tooth, it's probably going to be a bag of licorice somewhere stashed away. Plus, it doesn't go bad.
Nibs.
Yep.
Not
Nibs.
Black licorice though, right?
Not black licorice.
I'm not a fan. Are you?
I'm actually kind of I eat anything, and there's one thing I didn't like growing up was black licorice, but now I don't know. Now that I'm past 40, I'm kind of starting to like it.
Hey, change the palate. I like it.
Plus, it might work on a
Mike and Ike's. So a mix of Mike and Ike's. I like the different colored, multicolored Mike and Ike's. Hot tamales. Yeah.
Sweet tooth.
That's easy one for me.
Well, it's harder for me because I'm more south, right? So I do have a fair.
That's a good point.
I've got some quick trips available to me, and that's.
Is it quick start down there?
It's still quick trip. Quick trip. And that's what I prefer. But Casey's, there's some pretty fancy Casey's being built out there.
Yeah, they stepped it up big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Quick trip's pretty awesome. I went to school over in Eau Claire, so I got introduced to quick trip in my early 20s, and boy, they do a heck of a job. And you can, if you need to pick up some groceries for on the way home, some eggs and milk.
T-bones, whatever.
Yeah, Wagyu beef, like they kind of got it. So
I'm a Casey's guy, but I also have my Achilles heel in life is ice cream. And so I now have northern Minnesota mapped out. Any grocery or any gas station that has hard ice cream cones?
All right, that's interesting. All right.
So, yeah. Reamer, Minnesota, Ely. I got them all mapped out. So if I need an ice cream cone, I know where to stop.
Cheap little cone or the nice sugar?
No, you got to get a waffle cone, double scoop. Do it upright. Do it up. That's the way to go. But I can't do that. That's why I got to eat more almonds and cheese, because otherwise it doesn't help my waistline. So.
All right. Well, we can wrap it up. Thanks so much, you guys. Really appreciate you being here. And let's just push the last thing.
Well, for me, the Northwest Sports Show is all about boats. There's some fishing rods, a couple other things I like to check out. But, yeah, especially now with boats being so oversold, it's hard to find a great boat in the exact configuration you might want. there's no better way to check it out than right here, and that's why I'm here for the next 2 days.
It's been a really long winter, so it's just good to get excited about the upcoming season after this snow melt. So you have boats here, you have tackle here, you have a bunch of awesome destination tourism stuff to help generate ideas on what you might want to do in the upcoming season. And there's some good seminars as well to go learn. So just come on out to walk around, get some exercise, and get excited about getting outside.
I think for me, it's just you can watch all the YouTube videos you want. You can look online, all the stuff you want, but to actually come and climb in a boat, open the compartments, go grab a fishing rod, go look at a lure, just that tactical piece. And so if you are shopping, well, for any of those things, now you can actually feel it. What's it feel like? What's it look like? And to be able to come and do that in person, I think is the best thing you can do.
Thank you. You bet. Good work, gentlemen.
Good work. What time you talk?
Six p.m. Yeah.
What are you talking about?